Ho, ho, ho. That's right, it's nearly Christmas. This episode of The Big Jim Show is brought to you by Maul and Brawl. Maul and Brawl is a men's skin and beard care range founded by yours truly. It's been tried and tested by me with a smooth, deep scent of dark honey and tobacco. We'll have you smelling musky and back ready to Maul and Brawl again in no time. You can order the Caveman Pack, which is the shower gel, moisturiser and beard oil. The Modern Man Pack, which is the shower gel and moisturiser. Or you can be stingy and just buy one off. I'm only messing. Your custom is well received. Whether or not you're mauling in the office or brawling in the streets, Maul and Brawl is for you. Just head to maulandbrawl.com and use the code RugbyPod or BigJim10 and that'll give you a lovely 10% off. That's maulandbrawl.com with the code RugbyPod or BigJim10. Maul and Brawl, for men that maul.
Big Jim is wearing his heels.
On this episode, I'm joined by two wonderful humans, two massive humans, two of the strongest men in the world, Luke and Tom Stoltman. Hold up. The Big Jim Show? This is season two. We're going bigger and we're going better. Hit it.
This is the Big Jim Show.
We're here in the London studio, Tom and Luke Stoltman. Look, and we were talking about, we're trying to get it to happen a few years ago. I've aged over the last 2 years considerably. So if it was cheers, mate.
Thanks. Well, at least you're not doing like this guy over here.
We were saying
straight away digging me out.
That's what we've got to do. We've just got to pull a leveler here, haven't we? With the world's strongest men, it's cool. But we've been trying a while, haven't we? Me and Luke were going back and forth first, trying to make it happen a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Then Tom followed me and we're like, right, we're doing it. And is Tom the boss? Because like once he says we're doing it, so we're here now.
I make things happen. I make things happen.
If Tom's happy with things, then it's usually a lot easier.
Yeah.
Tom doesn't get... No, I think it's... Yeah, if you're happy with things, then we know it's a good fit. And thankfully, Tom's happy to do this. He might not be happy by the end of it.
I don't know. We'll see where we go. We got the rubber stamp. What, are you happy being in London? Because I know what it's like as a big man trying to knock about this crazy city.
Tube, let's just not talk about that. Getting in and out of taxis all the time. I'm in taxis all the time here, but... London's busy, very, very busy. It's like 100 miles per hour. Like, you know, this morning I woke up at, 5 a.m. You look out the window, it's like rush hour. You know, back home in Highlands, you can see one car in the road. So.
And a cow.
And a cow, yeah.
I mean, rush hour compared to the Highlands.
Yeah, every single hour here is rush hour. But it's, it's nice coming down for a few days and going home. Like, I love the Trafalgar Square, seeing all the sightseeing, but this life is not for me. I need that private, quiet life, the cold water, the gym, just... Not. I want a private life. London's not for me.
Because I think it's part of it being big men, and I can say that. I'm 6'9". Yeah. I was going to say in heels, but I am actually 6'9". I've worn my baggy clothes today, like I was saying, just so I can fill out the studio. But life isn't built for big men, is it? And like London, it almost like puts a microscope on that. Like we mentioned, getting around. Luke, what are you like? Are you on tubes and stuff like that? Are you out of your comfort zone? Or you're more worldly?
No, I wouldn't say I'm more worldly. I'm probably the worst. I just start sweating and like rock back and forth in the corner and people generally just stay away from that big sweaty Scotsman. But it's not a big man's world, definitely. You're right there. Even the flight down from Inverness, you know, the easy jet flight, we had to fly down and you're just like that.
I make myself as big as I can just so, because like, I sat down there and these two people were wanting to sit beside me, went, had the seats, I just went.
What do they do then? Like, do they just sit there?
I want my comfort just as much. I mean, planes aren't like made for big people, and you know, the weird people get the comfort. I want the comfort as well, so I spare my legs, put my lats out, and just sat there. Like,
it's quite funny though, because we're normally like on the aisle, so aisle next to each other, if that makes sense. And when the trolley goes up and down constantly, it hits us in the shoulder. So there's probably that much room to walk past when Tom and I are sitting next to each other.
But that's part of your life now with the travel and stuff like that. Have you had to get used to it, like life on the road? Do people stop you when you're in London and stuff like that? Because again, I'm going based on mine. I'm nowhere near at your level. Because you're so tall, you stand out and people are like, oh, I recognise him. But for you two, especially, I'm going to say Tom, because you're bigger and you've got the orange T-shirt on, like, are you getting stopped constantly?
every single time now we're traveling, anywhere we're going, especially London, you know, you get stopped, like you said, every second person, not just because straw man, well, straw man, it's just because I'm bigger. Like, people are like, oh, you must play rugby, you know, a few people yesterday, or you must be rugby for England, or you're a massive guy, can I get photos? So a lot of people just think you play rugby, and just because you're bigger than the average person, they just want a photo with you. It's pretty kind of, you know, heartwarming that people are actually stopping and, you know, interested in what you are. But yeah, there's a lot of, like, you know, a lot of tourists in London, not like the English, but like, you know, the kind of the Chinese, the Japanese, they just like it because you're bigger, like, oh, big guy, photo.
Yeah, so that's quite cool
when they say that. You just kind of laugh and go, yeah, okay, and then just pause, or, you know, they want a photo, but it's just you. They don't want a photo with you, so you just sit standing there like,
yeah, like Father Christmas.
Yeah, just by yourself, you're like, yeah, or, you know, it's just so, it's funny, yeah, but yeah, we get stopped everywhere we go now. I think myself and Luke are very good at building the profile, and I think we have done the last few years, and especially, you know, since this year after competing, we usually just kind of sit at home and we do like kind of the odd collab up in the Highlands and stuff. But after the competition this year, we were like, well, we need to go out and travel to places. You know, we were in Amsterdam with Wim Hof, we were going over to Iceland, we're doing the podcast here, we were doing stuff with L'Oreal, so we're trying to build our profile. But it just, I mean, I'm on a billboard, you know, in London, in Liverpool, in the underground, and it's cool. You're walking past going, that's me, you know, so it's just, so it's cool. Surreal, you know, and then people messing you, and that's what you get spotted on as well. I don't really get spotted, like I said, for being world's strongest man, but I think it's just for being the bigger guy, and it's a really cool thing to, you know, to be that 6'8" guy that people just think, you know, I say, sometimes I just say to them, oh, I'm a ballet dancer, or I play rugby, you know, people say to me, do you play rugby, and I'm like, no, I ballet dance, you know.
But so, that's hilarious, yeah, the fact that they say, do you play rugby, like, that is a thing, and it is a thing, yeah. That's great that they say that. Do you ever, at any point, just whisper in their ear and say, no, I'm actually the world's strongest man?
Sometimes, but something I go, it's even America, because in America it's NFL, and that's, you know, as soon as you get off a plane in America, hey, dude, you play NFL? Like, so it's NFL and rugby, like, rugby in UK, NFL, and so I just can't sometimes go with it. I just say, I play for, I make up a team, and they're like, oh, cool, yeah, where do you play? I'm like, front row or croc, whatever it is. I'm kind of,
Crocs.
Yeah, I go down like the scrum, and yeah, I'm one of those guys at scrum, so they're like, cool, dude, cool. So yeah, and yeah, but yeah, sometimes I say to him, or like someone will say, oh, he's the world's strongest man, and then they're like, no, they're not, no, he's not. So yeah, I think it's just a very surreal. Obviously, where me and Luke are from, you know, the Highlands, there's like a few thousand people, then to come to a big city and have like all that kind of attention on you, and to do these kind of really cool stuff that we do, it's just, you know, I'm just very grateful for it. Obviously, you know, we've been having been autistic and stuff, and then to think, you know, 10 years ago, none of this was possible, and then 10 years later, I'm just lifting weights, and I'm doing it as a career, I'm making a life of it. It's pretty surreal that, you know, people are actually stopping, are interested in what I do, interested in what Luke do, buy into our brand, and yeah, by just lifting weights, it's a cool, cool feeling. So.
That bit of humility in there, I'm just lifting weights.
Picking a bar up and putting it down, just like any other person.
The strongest man in history soon.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I know this is a story that you guys have told loads, and it's out there in the public domain, but just lifting weights, and I don't know whether this is because I'm fans of you guys, or I've always been a fan of Strongman. When it's on at Christmas, it's always been a kind of go-to when you watch it, but it feels like, Luke, there's been an elevation in that space. Like, people are drawn to athletes, but more so people are drawn to like big athletes. You look at boxing, heavyweight boxing, you look at the UFC, the heavyweight division, you mentioned NFL, like NBA, rugby. It's not just being an athlete, it's the size of the human as well. And we're obviously sat here as three big humans. I'm sat with two of the biggest probably in the UK. But like, have you felt there's a shift in that space as well? Because you're athletes effectively, that's what you are, but you're giant athletes.
Yeah, I think it's there. It's still, you know, we talk about like the freak show aspect, you know, it's very much, that's how Strongman initially started, you know, in the circuses and the circus Strongman. And I think people look to like bigger people as like a giant, or like it's like almost unattainable for some people to be that big. So now they can see Tom, yourself at 6'9". I mean, that's huge. That's like a modern day giant, really, you know, because
it's an inch taller than me. You're lucky.
Yeah, I'm an inch taller than you. Yeah.
You're bigger than heels, Tom, which is good. But I think just that size and that grandeur is off the human body. It's seeing how far you can push that body to see how big we can get. We were chatting about it in the taxi on the way over, but someone can come in at 200 kilos and not be a very good strongman because they don't know how to optimize their weight. And it's the same with rugby players. You can have a 160 kilo guy, looks massive, but can't move, he's not agile, he doesn't know how to tackle, he doesn't know how to do all those things. So when you combine everything, size, skill, technique, like Tom and myself and, you know, whoever else does, I think that's when it's almost a thing of beauty sometimes, seeing a big guy, oh my God, he can run quite fast, look how strong he is, look how amazing, you know, it's those type of things that I think people kind of warm to. And I like to think that generally speaking, like bigger guys are usually quite nice, you know, in the strongman circuit, we're quite approachable, even though Tom looks like a scary monster sometimes and makes babies cry.
Right.
But I think we're quite approachable. And when people come up to, certainly Tom and I, you know, we're very like welcoming and kind of friendly to people. Because again, as Tom says, it's a really big kind of honour and privilege that people take the time to come up and ask for a photo or have a little chat. And especially now, in, you know, about mental health or autism and things like that, that's what really kind of stands out. And just because Tom's 6 foot eight, I'm 6 foot three, and you know, we're pretty heavy, doesn't mean we're anything different. But I don't know, I think it's just that stories of old, you know, like going back to the gladiators and that kind of, it's almost like romanticizing a little bit about it. You know, we've all seen Gladiator when you come into the Colosseum, the big arena, you know, you're battling to the death. And sometimes that's what it feels like in strongman. You know, you're going into that big arena and you're putting your body on the line and seeing what you can do. And at the end of the day, you shake each other's hands, give each other a cuddle, and you know, you want everyone to lift as much as they can, but secretly you're always hoping that you're lifting the most.
I think it's people's reactions for as well, like with the tall, because well, my wife's 5 foot, so like obviously, you know, when you're going for airports or when you're at expos, she's beside us.
Well, you know what? I saw you on the Royal Mail. You might remember it years ago. You looked at me and I looked at you and I saw you. I think it would have been your girlfriend at the time. It was a long time ago. And like, naturally, I'm one that gets looked at, right? So I don't like being looked at all the time. Obviously, that happens. But I found myself like looking at you, and it was because you were with your partner who was so small as well.
That's, you know, by yourself you feel a bit, but when you're with, when I'm with her, they're just like, whoa. Some of them sometimes even say, is she your daughter? Or like, and I'm just like, it's just mad, the reaction, because that's the funny part about it. You know, you're so big, but then it's just like, I don't do it, but she talks to her, so like, these guys are like, got their jaws, they're dropping, and it's just funny. Her reaction is priceless, because she doesn't like people watching, like, why are they watching, why are they doing this? But it's so, so funny, especially when you're going through an airport, it's just me and Luke, and it's just like, everyone just literally freezes.
Yeah, it depends what mood you're in. Like, if I'm in a good mood or like high energy or whatever, that it's fine. But I think the difference is with you guys is that you're using your size and using that to like the utmost, like in probably the best arena, if we use that analogy, like there is. Mm-hmm. You know, like some people are tall or they're big, but they don't, or they've never had the opportunity to use their size. And that's one thing I wanted to ask about, like looking at the stuff that you've done online, seeing like interviews with your dad, like he's not big, is he? Like, I want to say he's not big, like he's not 6 foot three, 6 foot four, he's not 6 foot eight.
He's
an average man. And I get this all the time, like how the hell does a mum and dad up in the Highlands produce two humans your size? Have you worked that out or not?
No, I don't know. A couple of tall milkmen.
Even our wee brother's 6 foot five. So yeah. There's three of us. I mean, and like one of our sisters is, you know, taller for a girl as well. So
is there a throwback gene? Because for me, I mean, mine, you might laugh about this, no word of lie. You mentioned like Chinese people and Japanese people taking pictures. I'm a quarter Chinese. And people are like, where's the quarter Chinese? I look down at the little boy.
Yeah, that must be the only thing, because Jesus, there's no way.
But it's a throwback. So my sister's 6 foot, my brother's 6'6", my half-brother's 6'6", sorry. Jesus. And it's hilarious. He looks Chinese, and people think, oh, you're taking the piss. You're almost being racist when you say it. I'm like, no, genuinely. And then I've done a bit of research on it, so there's a throwback gene in Shanghai where people say, oh, Chinese people are notoriously small, which they are, but the tallest basketballer ever was Yao Ming, who was 7 foot eight. Tallest woman's Mongolian, which is effectively China as well. So there actually is a throwback, but with the Stoltmans, is there like a Viking gene that's kind of nipped in there?
We came, our dad's side, it was Polish and German.
Well, that, yeah, that's something.
So that so like, and dad's like cousins, relatives in the Polish side, they were really tall. So a lot of the guys were like 6 foot six, 6 foot seven. And on the German side as well, Germans are, some of them are quite big, big brutes as well. So I think that's probably where it stems from. And then on our mum's side, our cousins on our mum's side are all 6 foot three plus as well. So it's a notoriously quite big family.
So it's in there?
It's in there, yeah. There's something, it's quite a notoriously, like our family on the Stoltman side and then our mum's side. Yeah, so there's a lot of big fuckers about.
I don't really know where it came from, Phil, but there's, like I said, a lot of big people in our family. So yeah.
None as big as you, I don't think. You're
there. Our cousins, there's one cousin we've got on my mum's side that's 6'9", 6'10".
Okay.
So, yeah, he's big, and I'm just like, yeah, where did you get that from either? Because, again, his siblings aren't the biggest, but yeah, must just be a secret gene somewhere in the somewhere down the line. So.
Yeah, because when you look at the strong men, like Notorious, I know there's a few, like Thor would be about
Brian Shaw,
size.
Yeah,
so I mean, they are, you can be 6 foot seven, 6 foot eight, but they're not much bigger than that. They're probably historically, Luke, more your size, which is what, 6'4"?
6'3", 6'4", yeah.
That would be perceived before as the optimum size of a strong man, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of changed. It's kind of, you know, with whatever, you know, over the last few years, it's changed to becoming more of a tall person. But then you go back a few years ago, Alexei Novikov, Ukrainian strongman, he's 6'1".
6'1", and one of the lightest as well.
6'1", and one of the lightest guys in the World's Strongest Man, and he won World's Strongest Man. So,
but he was moving quick. He was like a quick mover.
Very quick, explosive, and he optimises. It's what we go back to starting what we said before. It's like optimising your strength, you know, your weight. So Alexei's maybe 130, 140 kilos, but he optimises it so well. He's been training since he was 8 years old, doing strongman. His granddad made all his strongman equipment and stuff, and he optimised every kind of ounce of strength he had. But then on the other side, you know, you've got the likes of Hafthor, you know, from Iceland, who's 6'8", 6'9". He's huge. I remember a few years ago, you sat in these type of chairs and you just couldn't see the chair. He was so, like gigantic. It was ridiculous. Like, I see Tom all the time and I know he's a big guy, but, like, Thor, I think that time, he's probably 200 plus kilos.
Yeah, because that's when he's leaned up now, hasn't he?
But he was just huge. And same with Brian Shaw. I remember seeing Brian Shaw take his top off for the first time, and I think we're in Botswana. I'd just come from the oil rigs. I had to fly straight out to Botswana to compete in World's Strongest Man. Brian Shaw takes his shirt off when we're going through event familiarisation. Fucking hell, man. What am I doing here? This guy's, honestly, the thickness on him. It was like, that's what got me. He was so thick. Like, Jesus, man, this is wild. Why? I just wanted to go home then. I was like, this is stupid. Thankfully, he wasn't in my group, so it wasn't too bad. But in years gone by, it was more the kind of 6 foot three, 6 foot four, like Mariusz Pudzianowski.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah.
Like, well, is he Polish, was he?
Polish, yeah.
Shredded.
Oh, just insane.
Body could step on a bodybuilding stage.
Yeah, he was my favourite, I'll be honest. Just because aesthetically he looked good as well.
That's why I wanted to get into it, because of him.
Oh, really?
Him and Derek Poundstone. Because Mariusz was up, but Derek Poundstone was at my height as well, and he was shredding. I was like, these two guys are different than, I mean, the older strongmen were a bit, you know, fatter and stuff, so, but Marius, I was just like, that's a superhero, man. The abs, he was crazy.
He was like showboating as well. Yeah. He was pulling the anchor and chain one time, and everyone else was doing it two hands, and he did it one hand, and he's posing to the crowd with his
banging. That a boy.
But you imagine, like, competing against that, you're like, God, this guy's doing it so easy, and it's so hard. It's like the psychological games he played with everyone.
The charisma as well, and the awe around him.
So it was cool. And then you go back, you know, to the earlier days with John Paul Sigmason, the Viking, you know, he was like the first real charismatic strongman that he was like shouting to the crowd, and I am the Viking, and, you know, and giving it, that was class. You know, that was, I think that's what any sport needs. You need to have that charismatic kind of energy and you know, give back to the crowd, because, I mean, I like to think we get pretty hyped up, but a lot of guys, you know, it's like, I am strong, and then that's it, you know. It's, but you have to maybe have a character to play or let out something, you know, because we all have that something inside us, you know, that raw emotion when you're doing well. It's like when you're rugby, you know, you're fucking pumped up, you know, you need to let that go and just have that raw emotion, and Like, that's what's cool now. When you see the guys, it's class.
So for me, that's what I've fallen in love with when I see it. And I love, and it's easy to say the gladiatorial aspect, like rugby, you know, NFL, them kind of contact sports, but because of the dust, you know what I mean? And the dust, and you're picking up the stones, and you're dragging shit about that's like heavy. There is a gladiatorial like feel and kind of look to the sport that you're in. So to play that, like, fucking come on at the end, I can't imagine the feeling and the adrenaline you must get, especially when you're at the top end. So if you're winning it or you're close to winning it and you're competitive, like in that space, like the feeling must be something that is probably unexplainable. And then winning it as well.
Oh, it's,
you know,
they say it's like the release of dopamine when you win something. So that's why like gambling is so addictive. It's like winning is so addictive because it gives you that, I'm invincible. You're standing that podium, Tom winning World Strongest Man twice. I got in a couple of podiums, Europe Strongest Man World Tour Finals. And that elation you feel, you're like, I could do this all the time. You're almost, it's like almost like an outer body experience, isn't it? When you do it, when you, and it's the same as any sport. When you win something you've worked so hard for, like years and years and years, and it finally all comes together in that perfect, almost like a masterpiece, isn't it? Everything just comes in. It's like, oh, fucking
every nice. Emotion comes out of you. Because when I won my first Worlds, I mean, you know, I wasn't, I was showboating, but like when I'm doing my events, basically my job, I try and keep as focused as I can. But I remember, like, you know, obviously it was, everyone wanted the me versus Brian Shaw showdown and, like, who's the best at stone. I remember being on the line with him. Luke had just finished his stone run and Brian was in the back with his guys and I was by myself, you know. I was like, Brian Shaw. Luke, where are you? How's it? And then Luke just came in, like, literally like a raging bull. I was like, oh, shit. And then he just came and went mental at me and I was like, I got scared because I'd never seen him like that angry and I was like, oh, and so that to me just got me so pumped up and I was like, I respect Brian Shaw, but I was like, he is a dead man. Like, I'm going to go out.
As in, because you've gone in, so you're looking for your brother, because, you've run
like,
in.
You know, when you're with Brian Shaw and his team, I was beside him by myself, kind of like shriveling up. Like, Brian's been in this position so many times, but I'm in this position for my first time, and this could be my first title. And I could just see Brian Shaw, you know, cool, and I was just, and Luke came in, yeah, just a raging bull. I was like, shit, Brian Shaw's dead. Like, I just was like, in my head, he's dead. And I just literally remember just doing all five stones. Brian was on his like third one when I was on my last one, turned around. And it's just like the whole world just lifts off your shoulder. I just lay to the ground, crying, going mental, like shouting there, Scotland, Scotland, Scotland. So yeah, it was unbelievable. But yeah, you just get that big, massive rush. And that rush stays with you for like weeks and weeks and weeks after, especially the first one, because it was COVID. I only had Luke there, didn't have my family, my wife. So you go back home and you just relive it all and you just keep doing the memories. You're like, I never want this to go away.
Yeah, I want it again.
More and more and more and more and more. And yeah, it's like an addiction. And then you just go and train harder. And then I did it the second year with the family again. And you just, it's a feeling that you can't explain. Even like doing the Giants Live, like the ones in Glasgow, that just happened at, you know, Luke won the first year, I won this year. And like, that's in your home country. And the crowd's unbelievable. Like when I lifted the last stone, I think it was the noisiest, what did they measure? It was like the noisiest.
Yeah, the meter.
Yeah, the meter reader was the noisiest. Yeah. And I just stood there for like 10 seconds. Like I couldn't do any emotions. And then after, and the whole crowd were just up on their feet. And you're just like, this is what you live for. Like, you know, like to watch this, and like 7-8 years ago, it was in a wee car park, to this now, and I'm on top. It's like, this is what you want. And it just gets so addicting. And you get goosebumps, you get, it's just...
Well, I'm getting goosebumps listening to you talk about it. Because just, this is what, like, they talk about it in sport, and we spoke about it in rugby. It's like that, a coach said to me, it's that 30 seconds of euphoria, having won a game, that, and I get goosebumps talking about it now, that you will never get, unless you've had it, like, you can never explain. Like, I think you lads have explained it so well. Like, all the training, everything that goes in behind, the years and years of pain, the injury, the diet, the sacrifice, all these different things that go in for that one moment of like the feeling of being alive. And I think that's why sports people struggle, don't they? Like, because once you've had them feelings, like I look at the 03 England team, I don't know, it's just one example, but when Johnny drops that goal, and we know about Johnny's mental health, the way that he talks about things, how do you relive that moment? Like, as in, especially in that sport where, well, like every sport, you're going to retire at 35, maybe a little bit later as strongmen, but to have tasted it and that feeling of alive, it's really difficult to explain. And like, I think you've explained it really well. And no more in them sports, the gladiatorial sports, where it is about being a man and it's about being unapologetic about being a fucking strong man and the strongest man in the world or the strongest men in the world. You know, so you talk about the alpha part of it. Like, boxing's the same. I think that's why it is the same. Because as a boxer, you're knocking people out. That feeling of doing that, it's probably unimaginable how you feel when you've done that. You're Mike Tyson, you're the hardest man in the world.
Yeah, crazy.
You know, the strongest men in the world. Like, it's a thing. Yeah. Hey. Not that. So mine wasn't like that. We won a Champions Cup. I played about 3 minutes and got one turnover. And that was it. And that was my moment of euphoria. So I tasted it. Slightly.
It's difficult then, like you say, afterwards, and I guess that's why a lot of athletes, men as well especially, I think struggle with the head after it, you know, so I think that's very important for Tom and I, because we know that it's not going to be the longevity of having or being world's strongest man is relatively short. So now it's like, what do we do now? So that's why we're putting an emphasis on the brand, raising the profile, and then like when we sell a t-shirt, I still get that little, oh, that's class. Yeah. Like, we've got someone from Japan buying our t-shirt. That's insane. You know, so it's those little things that you can take now. And if we stopped doing strongman, I had nothing after, I'd be back in the oil rigs. Tom would be doing whatever.
What would you be doing?
Playing Xbox or something.
That's all our opposite.
That's what Luke said. I mean, because that's what, like, obviously Luke's got a few years left to compete, but that's what I get scared of is, you know, like, I've still... You know, everything going well, no injuries and stuff. I've still got like 10, 11 years, but I don't want to think past that because I always visualize still being on the top because it's that buzz. You know, like when things are going down in training, I'll watch and I'll go like, this is what I live for, this like 30 seconds of, you know, that win and that moment. And then it's like, you know, in 10 years' time, if this goes away from me, it's like, what do you do? And that's, luckily, you know, we do have the brand and stuff as well, but it's just, you always get scared that this is going to get taken away. It could get taken away tomorrow. It could get taken away in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. But yeah, you just have to relive it all the time, and that's why like Luke always goes like, oh, what should we like? They're building the brand, and like, oh, in 10 years' time, what you're gonna do is like, I want to be doing this till I die, because like, I just, you know, you just love winning and you just love competing, and it's just, yeah, it's a scary moment. That's why like I'm quite glad that I'm 29. Luke's nearly older, because you know he's coming.
You're not
to
40 end. Yet, though, are you?
No,
you're not old.
How old are you?
I've just turned. No, I say I keep telling everyone I've just turned 40. I'm 41 tomorrow. Just turned 40.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I'm 41 tomorrow.
All right, okay.
Yeah, that's the turning point. That is the turning point. But like, but the longevity of it, and what is the peak strength, do they say? Is it in your 30s or not? Because what you're Tom, you're 29.
I'm 29, but I mean, so everyone's different, because like, you know, like for example, Mark Felix, who's now I think like 56 years old.
That's ridiculous.
He's just retired and he hit 11.
Well, he's competing in the weekend.
But I mean, like, World Strongest, he's just retired from World Strongest Man last year, and he hit like 15 World Strongest Man finals in a row. But he started at like late 20s. So like, I think Mark's the perfect example. If you can look after your body, and I think like, you know, anyone that sees Mark on the street doesn't think he's 56 years old or whatever he is. But
for
myself, I want to be able to... Like, even if I'm not at the top at World Strongest Man, I still want to be doing the sport till, you know, till I can't really kind of do it. But like, most 55-year-old men are retired and, you know, just or
fucked.
An office job. Yeah. Fucked, yeah. Basically, yeah. So,
how was it for you for giving up like the rugby and everything, and like you experienced that high, like you say, in the cup? And but then, what do you get from now? Is it like the podcast, doing your presenting and stuff? Do you get a little bit from it?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah,
the World Cup being close to the Gladiators pitch side, that gave me the biggest buzz. Because I was there, and not that I've experienced winning a World Cup, but you're there with like-minded men.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest void for me, was you're in a testosterone-fueled brotherhood environment, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
And like, listen to you chat, Tom, about thinking about the future and something like that. Not that I'm here to give you advice, but one thing, as a rugby player, you knew that your career was going to be short. You know, I got to 34 and I limped to 34. I was fucked by the end, destroyed my thyroid, had a broken rib, was injection painkiller. So I was like a dead dog. I would have been put down. But the one thing that I wish, and I did it towards the end of my career, was I enjoyed the moment. Whereas before, it was always about like, what's next, here we go, which is a sports man, woman's mindset, isn't it? That's what you do, what is next, I'm on to the next. Whereas I made sure that the back end of my career, I didn't have music on before the games, I'd look up in the stadium. Right. When I played for Scotland, I made sure that I took in the energy and the atmosphere, because I remember Jason White, you might remember Jason White playing in the back row for Scotland, number six. Like he said, it'll be gone like that. And when he said that, I was like, you know, you're right. And then it was gone. And you never replicate them things again. Like, you just don't know. I've got kids. I'm lucky enough to have children, which is obviously amazing. But yeah. I think as a man, as an athlete, as someone who loved the contact, loved the physical, it was gone and I was fucked. So it wasn't as if, like, I could still do it. So that was probably easier. There isn't, like, you don't replicate it. Like, I've got a Watt bike. You might have seen it on social media. I'm posting some stuff. You two would be unbelievable on that.
The Watt bike.
But that's my go-to. Like, I smash the Watt bike. I love doing a little... I'm going to say weights. I love doing a bit of weights as well. But I think that that's why, like, so lucky to be a high-level elite sport. But the sadness around it is that
it's going to end.
It's going to end. Like, you're not like an accountant or a lawyer, or you're in that. Not that you get the same thrill, but it is going to end at some point.
Because just what you're saying there, like, not listening to music. That's what I actually stopped putting my headphones on for these competitions. I always, like, walk out now and soak in the atmosphere, soak in the crowd, soak in the, you know, the stadiums. Because I just breathe in, like, I'm competing here. And like, I only ever put, like, music now on at the side of me and just listen. But I've stopped listening to headphones and take every single thing in. Because, like you said, this moment could be, you know, go in a minute and you want to be able to, like, kind of hear the crowd in your brain and kind of see the lights and stuff. So yeah, I kind of started doing that now. Is like the last few competitions, just headphones away, and really enjoy being there, because you can, like I said, it can go in a heartbeat. So you need to enjoy every single moment. So
yeah. Well, the psychology part wasn't there either when I played, and like you see you guys doing, like, who would have thought Wim Hof 15 years ago would be someone now?
Oh, wild.
You know, the cold, as back in the day, we would have been, what the fucking hell? Pilates, yoga, meditation, what is this bollocks? Whereas now it's everything, the mind. And it wasn't back then. It was just like, toughen up, fucking strap your boots on, regardless of what state your body is in, take a load of painkillers and off you go. Whereas there's a big shift now, isn't there, with the mental aspect, the headspace, and you get that right, then everything will follow. Like, I know, like, maybe to you, Luke, like, talking about that.
Yeah.
And when you're not just managing yourself, you're supporting your brother as well, I'm sure that headspace is probably the point of difference, right?
Definitely. I mean, that's, you know, it's a combined effort between Tom and myself. You know, it's, we kind of made that decision to look after ourselves mentally. A couple of years ago, back in 2019, 2020, you know, we decided to speak to a clinical psychologist. I actually knew this doctor. He said, oh, Amy, you know, I think Tom might benefit with some help from you. And she said, yeah, that'd be brilliant. Love to help him. And, you know, just with, there was like a mystery event and Tom struggled. You struggled with that a little bit, didn't you? And so she said, yeah, I'd love to talk to him. That'd be great. And she said, oh, what about you? I said, what do you mean, Amy? I'm fine. I'm sound. This is class. Like,
old school.
Yeah, I'm fine. You know, coming from the rigs, workers. I worked like 17 years offshore on the oil rigs, and don't worry about it. Just go and drink and it'll be fine. And she said, oh, let's just have a wee look. And we did a few things, and she didn't say it, but she said, oh, basically, you're a little bit mental. So let's have a wee look at you and see how we can fix that. Because being from the Highlands as well, we down ourselves quite a lot. You know, and Scottish, I think Scottish folk do that. Oh, we're just Scottish. What, we'll just drink whiskey and have a battered Mars bar, and you know that we kind of down ourselves a lot. So it was like transforming that mindset was so important to go and thinking, you know what, fuck this, man. We're two of the strongest men in the world. And then after we started speaking to her, Tom won World's Strongest Man the first time, literally 6 months later. I then won Europe's Strongest Man, and then went on to win the first time in Glasgow World Tour Finals. And It's no, like, coincidence. You know, you can say, oh, well, it was just because that guy wasn't there, or it was just a good set of events. And it wasn't. It was because we started looking after ourselves mentally. And then that was speaking to the clinical psychologist. But then Tom and I were kind of quite big with the cold water stuff. You know, that's massive. And a lot of people say, oh, it's just a fad or a phase and all this stuff. But, like, we've been doing that in the cold since we were children, but just not realising, you know, how fucking happy it makes you. You know what I mean? You go into the sea, like, that's our summer holidays. Our holidays was spent, so you got Invergordon, and then maybe 40 minutes away, there's a place called Embo, Granny's Healing Hame, caravan park. You know? So we didn't go away and, like, out to Spain or anything like that for a long, long time. So when we were younger, we went to there, set up a tent, went in the sea with mum and dad, and you had the best time. You're always buzzing. You got to blow up, you know, the Lilos. You blew up that and like, went in the waves. And I'm like, fucking hell, that was class. And then you're always trying to go back to being a kid. You know, you went, oh, I wish I was a kid again. So happy, it was so easy. And things can be easy, but you just got to let this kind of, the old noggin go sometimes, don't you? And for me, going into cold water in the morning, seeing a sunrise and like being reconnected with like Mother Nature, and I get to connect with Mum. We lost Mum back in 2016, mm-hmm. so she was like the biggest kind of thing for us. But now I get to see her every morning and I'm chilling. I'm like, oh, hey, man, how's it going? Have a wee cry in the water, laugh, get angry, get to do it with Tom. You know, we do the cold water after the training sessions as well. Tom comes to the beach sometimes as well. And it's just a nice way of being reconnected to that kind of little inner child, you know, that little mischievous child. Mm. Oh, I'm going to throw some stones. That's fun. You know, doing those type of things. And there's so many ways. Now, like you said, you know, maybe 10 years ago, and I'd be the same. Probably 5 years ago, if I was speaking like this 5 years ago, I'd shake myself and say, stop being a fanny, look, what are you talking about? Cold water and, like I do a thing on a Thursday night. I go to a yurt with a group of guys, some women, and we do chanting. We do like mantras and drumming and like, it's wild. It's like, we chant Om, and you know, so it's like
Tom's not feeling the air. Are you at that point yet?
It's the Scottish Wim Hof.
There's a good brand of Wim Hof.
Yeah. So Luke Hof. But it's just realizing that there is a lot of others like these type of mantras and chanting and all that. They've been going on for tens of thousands of years. Like predates, you know, like the shamanic practices and stuff that predates any religion. You know, it's been there for so long. So why wouldn't it work? You know, the vibrations, you talk about the vibrations. You know, if you got someone drumming, like you're like, whoa, you go into a trance-like state. That's why I think when you're in a crowd, you know, when we get into a crowd and you get in, people are cheering like so loud, you're like, oh, and you feel that adrenaline that can spike you. You know, music as well.
Yeah.
So why can't it be? Why can't we just do things like that? And but yeah, 5 years ago, if I was wearing a big poncho going to a yurt on a Thursday night chanting, I'd be like, what are you doing, you maniac? But it's breaking that stigma down, I think, isn't it? It's because it was an issue, burying our feelings and not talking about it. And just like when mum passed away, a week after, I went straight back out to the rigs and started working, because I was like, oh, well, that's what mum would want. Start work and be fine. And I would be, you know, in the shower, sitting in the shower offshore crying, and that's not okay, you know. And then you go down at work, oh, how's it going, guys? It's a good day today, and go to the gym, and you would never open up. And then that's when, you know, maybe drinking too much, self-sabotaging, and all those things related with grief kind of came to me. And I wasn't doing mum's memory a justice by doing that, but now, hopefully, you know, wherever mum is looking down on us, I hope she's smiling and think, that's my boy, he's a wee bit mental, but I still love him. Because she was a little bit mental, wasn't she? Mum was like,
she was the definition of mental. <isn't>
She was into her tie-dye stuff, and like, she was like a gardener, she plants sunflowers. And now every year, our dad plants about 7,000 or 8,000 sunflowers along his wall.
With your story, the unique part of it, which I fell in love with and is really, really interesting, but maybe not that interesting when you talk about it, is the brotherhood and the fact that you are brothers. And I've heard you talk about when your mum passed that you felt like you had the responsibility to look after your brother and stuff like that. But your story as well, Tom, of what you went through as a kid, like that, not that it's all stories and stories and stories that build this unbelievable narrative, but the sincerity and how genuine it is, like that I'm drawn to that. And so many people are drawn to you in that space because, you know, you watch Tom win World's Strongest Man, if like you're his mate, right, and you're not his brother, and he wins it, like you're buzzing for him. But there's a bit of your fucking, you know. And I don't know if you have that at all, but you can just see how much you love your brother and how much you do for him and how much it means in that. You know what I mean? It's a special bond that you've got, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think it is. It's very much so. You know, because I, and it's the age gap as well, I think, because it's 10 years. when Tom was younger, he got diagnosed with autism when he was quite young. And like Tom doesn't, you don't really remember like the full hardship that he went through, because it's still quite a traumatic thing.
Yeah, it's like a nightmare. So like, the only way I can remember things sometimes is by looking at pictures
which is weird because I never ever thought, I think, oh, yeah, I was diagnosed with autism at a young age, I was all right. But then I look at a picture and Luke tells the story or whatever. So, yeah, it's just like a nightmare. It's weird. Like, from, say, 11 years old, my life's like a memory, a distant memory. I don't remember anything.
Yeah, just on that then, just with autism now, and these things are spoken about, ADHD, especially in boys, like autism in kids, and they speak about them now in such a better way in terms of being a superpower, which clearly it was for you. But just, Luke, before you we talk about the being brothers thing, talk to us what it was like as a youngster growing up with that, from what you remember, how difficult it was, especially being in the Highlands, you know, not that you need to be in London to be diagnosed, but being in a kind of a family that lived in the outdoors, all these things, and you're probably seen as not normal, like a weird kid or whatever it is.
Obviously, I lived with it my whole life, but the thing that helped me get through was I had such a supportive family. I mean, my mum was my root. Like, I always used to go to her for everything, like problems, high and low. She was basically the stay-at-home mum for me. Like, obviously, having four other siblings, they sacrificed loads of stuff to make sure I had the best life possible. Like, I love football. Football was the thing that I wanted to do as a kid, and my wee brother despised football. I absolutely hated everything to do with it, but he came to football training with me, stood in goals all day, every day in the garden, and just let me kick balls at him, because that didn't make him feel better, but he knew it would make me feel better, and it would make my life better, and it would make my family's life so much easier and better. And then obviously my dad as well didn't really much do football when he was home. In the garden every single day, they would literally drive me to every single football game. I'd play for my local football club. They'd drive me home and away, you know, support me that way. And like, that's the only time I felt normal. But then in school, you know, I'd get bullied a wee bit. I would just feel like I couldn't do, like, you know, when I was like 11, 12 years old, these 11, 12 year old kids were so much smarter than me. I just thought, you know, I can't go to the school. Why am I kind of, I thought, dumb? Why am I different? Why can I not sleep over at my, I couldn't sleep over at my friend's house. I couldn't go on a train from Invergordon to Holness, which is 2 minutes away. My friends would do things. I couldn't do things with my family.
And why was that? Was that like anxiety that
just,
you have?
Yeah, anxiety, and just always wanting my mum, because I was so glued to my mum from a young age. And, you know, for me to get diagnosed with autism, the schools didn't believe my mum. No one believed her. So she had to like record me doing my kind of behaviours and give it to the school and say, this is what Tom's like. And, you know, for a mum to do that, it's like, it's heartbreaking, because they didn't believe her. And then, you know, I finally got diagnosed that way. So in school, I got a wee bit of help. But yeah, like, the kids never said to me, oh, you're different. But like, I'd try and go over to my friend's house to sleep over, and at 11 p.m. I'd have to call my mum saying, you have to come for me. And then they would be like, you know, why is Tom not, like, does Tom not like me? Or why is Tom doing this? Does he not like my parents? Do they not like this? And I did that with everything I'd done. Even, like, even though it was 5 minutes away from my house, I had a friend that was next door to my mum and dad's house, and I literally still had to go home at 11 p.m. So all that kind of stuff, to me, you know, I kept it all in, but it was just going through my head all the time. Like, you know, I'd lock myself in my room and play Xbox and just go like, why can't I be normal? Why can Luke get a job? Why can my wee brother socialise with friends? Why does my sister do this? And why can't I? Why has someone, like, got me on this earth and just not let me be normal? And it just kept going through my head, because obviously when you're 10, 11, 12 years old, you just kind of, you don't think there's anything wrong with you. You just think, I'm just a crazy kid. And that's what a lot of people thought. I'd go to supermarkets and, you know, as like a, I'd like, you know, fling things off shelves. I would try and get like, just, I'd want to do a lot of stimulating things. And, you know, people just look at you and look at my mum and be like, this kid's crazy. And then like, she'd go out with like, you know, my wee brother Luke and stuff. And they'd be like, why is this kid different to these four? Like, it doesn't make sense. So, yeah, it was very, very hard growing up like that. I think the lucky thing is actually being from the Highlands. Because if I was from a bigger city, I think there would have been so much more people, like, looking at me. But being from the Highlands, my mum being so supportive, and then my sister as well, knowing about autism, they're the two people that were, like, you know, so obviously, like, I didn't really have much of a relationship with Luke, because, you know, he's when I'm 10, 11 years old, he's 21, 22, doing his own thing. So it was just very, very hard. And then football got taken away from me, because I was like, I'm never going to be a professional footballer. But every single thing I did, I quit, because when things got uncomfortable, I just had my mum at the side, so I knew I could just go back to her. Like, you know, I'd go to college, quit. I'd have a job, quit. I'd try other sports, just quit every single thing. I just thought to myself, like, I eventually just locked myself in my room and was like, you know, what's the point of being here? Like, I literally can't do what Luke does, can't do what my wee brother's doing. I need to be a role model for my wee brother. Can't be that. Can't go offshore because I'm petrified of going away at my house myself. Can't even travel 5 minutes by myself. How am I meant to be here? And it was just so bad. And like, you know, just, I always just thought to myself, it wasn't people that labeled me. I labeled myself because I just was like, why can't I do this stuff? Like in my head, I just all the time, why can't I do it? Why can't I do it? Why can't I do it? And then fast forward, and that's when I met the gym at 16 years old. This is when my life was like probably at my lowest. Like, I just played Xbox and in my room. My dad, it would be like I was in a jail cell. My dad would give me my tray of food. I'd shut the door, eat the food, play Xbox, do that every single day from say like at 9 a.m. till 7 p.m., 8 p.m., go to sleep, wake up at 5 a.m., switch the Xbox on, repeat, repeat, repeat. And then that's when my mum had a concern of like saying to Luke, you know, you have to do something with Tom here because like football's gone, there's nothing. And then this is when Luke took me to the gym, and you know, 16-year-old boy, I was like, oh, fuck, like, this is, there's never, like, he's massive, he's coming, oh, like, Tom, you have to come to the gym with me, like, come on, huh? And him being, like, 26, 27 at the time, he knowing about the gym, but that was my worst take, because I had, like, you know, going into the gym, seeing mirrors, seeing big guys, seeing girls, and I just thought every single person was staring at me. It's like I was in a big hole getting sucked outside, my hood up. The only person I would talk to was Luke. When he went away on work, that was the hardest thing, because I'm like, right, I'm getting into a routine, he's gone now, how am I meant to keep going? But then I just kept saying to myself, there's something in my head that said, don't quit. And for some reason, I didn't quit. So I just kept, like, Luke never pushed me. It was just like going slowly, 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 starting off slow. He was doing my diet, he was doing everything. And then we started building a relationship that we didn't really have. And like, you know, for all the gyms to me, it's kind of, it brought us closer as brothers. And that's the most powerful thing, because like, I didn't realize going to the gym would help me with my autism, would help me mentally. I didn't care about it physically. Physically, I was capable of, you know, within a year of the gym, I was, you know, improving so much. It was up here. I didn't realize that going to the gym to lift iron would help me talk to people, would help me open up in a straw man, would help me tell people about my autism, would help me change it from a label to a superpower. So like when I say like the gym's saved my life, people go, oh, you're bonkers, you're just saying that. But like, I'm a blueprint of it saving my life. It's brought brothers that, you know, were never close, because obviously Luke did his own thing. I had my struggles, autism. Luke was working, trying to do his life, to then come together and have the best bond in the world, to then have a business together, to travel the world together, to do all these things. That's the only thing that I cared about, was like, wow, Luke's actually took so much trust in me. And it was like a big thank you, know, like, you know, my mum obviously wanted me to be happy. Before she passed away, she wanted me to be happy, you know, and just straw man. She didn't say, I don't care about straw man, I just want you to be happy. And that's, I think, the thing that, you know, she'll look down on now, and like, me and Luke are the best bond ever. And that's what autism does. Autism is so powerful. And when I put my mind to something, I realised that it's a superpower, because I was waking up every single day, tunnel visioned of what I wanted to do. And I was like, you know, you see these Superman and Batman on TV and they're like big, they're invincible, they don't care about anyone. I just got out of bed every single day. I didn't care about what anyone said. I didn't care. I had this goal. I was writing it down every single day, and I was smashing life, and I was so OCD. And I think people without autism get distraction and get that. I just had this tunnel vision, and that's why I was like, right, any kid that has autism can be whatever they want. And that's kind of how the gym has done so much to myself. Even doing this stuff, like, you know, when I was in school, these talks, I'd be in the class, I ain't doing no talks. I walked out of school, I didn't end up going to school. And then even Strawman at the start couldn't do talks. But now, you know, YouTube channel, I did so much stuff to help me in front of cameras, and now I can't shut up. So it's, you know, it's just a bit of the story. But like, yeah, the gym, yeah, has saved me as an autistic kid, but also helped me get a better relationship with family, and also find a wife and be able to live myself, have a business. So, you know, it's an amazing thing to do. And when you put yourself in that vulnerable spot at 16 years old, where I was like, right, I'll try it, but I don't think I'll ever do it, to then fast forward 10 years later to where I am now. Yeah, it's amazing what, you know, I give Luke credit, I give my family credit, but I also have to give myself credit, because if I didn't keep doing stuff and trying doing stuff myself and trying to say to myself, you know, you can do it, then I wouldn't be here where I am. I wouldn't be here without Luke. Luke wouldn't be here without me, but we also wouldn't be here without ourselves as well. So.
Quite an incredible story. I know it's one you've told a few times, and I can see, like, you must still take it in and be like, to get from where you were in that situation to where you are now, and I say where you are as in just like a decent bloke, you know, and to get to that point, the rest is the cherry on top, you know what I mean? The rest is like fucking Superman, you know, when you actually think about it, because something was clearly there with the size, the genetics, all these different things, the stars have aligned. But especially now, like being a kid is tough. Being a parent's tough because kids are so different now, aren't they? Whether or not, you know, they have dyslexia or ADHD or autism or things that are perceived as not normal. Like, I've got four kids. Like, my lad's like me, I can see. I don't want to put a label on him, but he wouldn't be under the normal bracket of sitting still. And I suppose it just shows that there's two things. Like, one clearly is exercise. We've spoken about that. But family and surrounding yourself with people that see the best in you, you know what I mean? See the best in you and could be able to drive that. And that's what I mean, the story of the two brothers that are the strongest men in the world. You know, like, do you ever sit back, Luke, and think, fuck?
Oh, every day, man.
You do?
Yeah, every day. That's why when I go for a swim, and it lets me reset and kind of be thankful for things, you know, because this isn't it's not a normal thing. You know, Tom, you know, we're a couple of little guys from Invergordon, the Highlands. Hopefully, people on the spectrum, kids on the spectrum, can see Tom and they look up to him and think, fucking hell, if Tom can do it, Jesus, why can't I do that? You know, that's the beauty, I think, behind it. And that's being able to do it as brothers. You know, it's a lot of people kind of, you know, oh, I took Tom into the gym, whatever, but it was me that was needing Tom as well. I needed that, like, that support from my brother. You know, Tom's one of the nicest guys in the world. When I used to go away offshore, when I used to travel abroad and stuff, Tom probably doesn't remember, you probably don't remember this, but whenever I landed, he said for me to phone him, can you phone me when you land? So like I'd land, whatever, like say I was working in Asia or whatever. Hey, Tom, it's me, just landed. He's like, oh, it was the flight, okay. I said, yeah, it's fine, it's all good, mate. I'll give you a message when I get to the hotel. So with Tom and his kind of, his autism or whatever it is, you know, it was a routine thing. So everything had to be regimented, routine. And that was a form of safety, I think, for you as well. So when you talk about the train from Invergordon to Alness, which is about 3 or 4 miles, that was out of your routine. And that was like, oh, what's going to happen when I go on the train? It's not safe. It's not, mum's not there. Mum was your like safety blanket. And then, you know, I think I probably took on the role of that safety blanket, but then likewise I go into a gym and I get like, you know, you get that gym anxiety, you know, when you go to a new gym, like, oh, I don't like this, but when I'm with Tom, it's like we've got that power. It's safety in numbers. It's Tom's got that love for me, I've got that love for Tom, and it's just nothing but like pride, I think, we feel for each other, you know. So that first time, going back to World's Strongest Man, when Tom won that the first time, like, I'd messed up my stone run. I could have finished the podium, but unfortunately, I'd slipped in the second last stone, and I kind of messed things up. So I could have had that moment. I was like, oh, this is self-pity, you know, and then I was like, oh, Jesus, Tom's going to be in there by himself with Brian Shaw with his guys. And as Tom says, I pushed the fucking doors open. I was like, right, you wee fucking cunt, fucking go, mate. Fuck them, you're the fucking strongest man in the world. They've got nothing on you. Absolutely. Like, Brian's guys were loud and shouting, but my voice is quite deep. So I was like...
I'm Scottish.
That, yeah, so it's like, it's intimidating. And you can see Tom's eyes. He was like that little boy again. You know, that little kind of autistic boy from Invergordon, like, oh, fucking hell, Tom, come on. Like, slapping him and, like, G'ing him up. And then when he went out on that stage, I kept just shouting at him, and like, that's the beauty of being brothers, because you know how you react to those type of situations. So Tom's done it to me before at World's Strongest Man, where it's a max log. He doesn't need to do much to me. He just puts his hand on his shoulder and says, you know, you got this, it's fine. And that's it. I'm like, oh, that gets me in the feels. But then for Tom, it's that aggression, and he gets it. And then, you know, Brian's a lovely guy, but he's got his rituals. He goes over each stone, blah, 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 takes his time. I'm like, fucking don't worry about him, Tom. Just fucking one job. You're the best. And like, you're saying, do this for fucking mum. You're doing this for mum. This is what you're here for. And then it was like, like a bloody orchestra, like boom, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
boom.
Yeah. Wow.
And then that was it. Looked round at Brian. And again, my favourite moment, if you can watch it back, it was like that disbelief. Again, it was like that moment when he went back to being that little boy from Invergordon with autism. He didn't believe that was like what happened. And then he just became the greatest strong man on the planet. And as soon as Tom started going to the gym when he was 16, within, I think, 17 years, you were deadlifting 300 kilos. And I'm offshore.
One year, not 17 years.
By the time you were 17, I remember you were posting it. You posted it on Facebook, and I'm stuck in a shithole of an oil rig in the North Sea, the Alba North platform. That was a horrible job. It was like,
I was looking at proper.
It was brutal, man. I just come back and I remember the job. I'd like crawl probably underneath like this table. And like being a big guy, it was like trying to get into different positions, measure pipes, check pipes and all the rest. And I'm so tired. Went to the gym, had food, went back to the room at night, probably like 9:30, 10:00 at night, on the bottom bunk, like whoever it was, in front, up in the top bunk, snoring and farting. I'm like, oh God. My shoulders were overhanging the bed. And then you go on Instagram and Tom's out in Dubai Mall eating fancy food. Saying how everything's, I'm like, what the fuck? He's 10 years younger than me, and I'm stuck off with an oil rig. So I messaged my wife Cushy, and said, look, I'm not going to go offshore anymore. This is me. I'm done. I can't do it. Like, I don't want to be, you know, you get those guys in the bar, like when you're 50 years old, and like, oh, I could have done that, son, when I was, and that's what I was going to be. I was going to be one of those guys. And again, it's not, you're not doing like mum. You want to do her a good memory and a good justice and stuff. She sacrificed so much for us. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons as well that, you know, we push ourselves so much is because, like, mum with her cancer, you know, we're very fortunate to be with her all the way through that, and we got to see her goodbyes. But during that time, you also got to see her go through, like, immense pain and still battle on, still, like, you know, 3 days before she passed away, she was making pear tarts, you know, like, I tell the story, like, you know, you've got the mixing bowl, she's cracking the eggs, putting the shell into the mixing bowl and putting the inside of the egg into the bin and mixing it. So I was like, mum, come on, let's get a wee chat. And, but she was in agony, you know, her feet were swollen and she had to get, like, injections in her spine to stop her from going paralysed. And it was really tough. But seeing, like, we see it, I know it's quite cliched and cheesy, but when you see someone go through that real pain, it makes you think, like, all we're doing is lifting weights. That's what Tom said at the start. Like, that's why it is. It's all we're doing is lifting weights. That's not real pain. That's just like a second.
Health, happiness, and love before wealth. You know, like, I think, you know, I think Wim Hof said that. A few other people say that you can be a millionaire and stuff, but you can die at 50 years old, and you know what you're gonna do with that money. But if you have health, happiness, and love, and live your whole life like that, it's a great life. And you know, I think, you know, that's kind of the thing that Luke quit his job and probably got more healthier quitting his job, not being offshore, you know, got more happy. And then, you know, the love was more bonded. And that's what we always should live by, I think, because you can chase money every single day, but you're always ever just chasing money. You're never chasing happiness and you're never chasing what you want. You're just chasing that money because you think having loads of money, having loads of material things is nice. But, you know, man, you're not born with money, you don't die with money. So it's what you do in your life's the best. And that's why, like, being autistic and having, like, I watched Eddie Hall's documentary when, you know, he did that thing, and I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sacrifice everything. I don't care about money. It was like a week before Christmas, I texted, I went home, and she was like, why are you home? I was like, I've quit my job. And she was like, what the fuck? It's 1 week before Christmas. I don't care. It's like, money, just leave it. And then I was just like, I'm just doing this. I've got one chance in my life to do this. I can go back to any single job in the world whenever I want to. That's why I did that. I didn't chase money. I just wanted to chase, you know, happiness. I just wanted to make myself feel happy. I just wanted to chase love, and I just wanted to chase health. And that's kind of how I live for now. So
there we go. I would, if I was religious, I'd say amen. But I feel you. You know, I know, been through grief as well. It's actually 2 years today that my wife's mum died of cancer, the day before my birthday. And I watched her demise and the pain that she was in. But then on the flip side of that, I saw the power of love. Like, I come from a very broken family, so not the same as her, but her mum Anne was the focal point of her family. You know, she wasn't the one that was going out to work. My wife's dad was the one going out to work. You know, they were doing what they were doing, not taking things for granted, but she was like the glue. And I saw the pain that they went through as a family, and then losing, you know, the mum of the family. Like, it's a tough place to be in, and it's part of life, isn't it? That's the sad thing, is it's like that these aren't one-off things. It's, people are going through this. It's how you choose to then deal with that grief and move forward and motivate yourself in that space. So the way that you lads speak about it is powerful.
How's your wife now? Is she coping okay? I guess it's a tough day today.
We got four kids. Yeah. So, yeah, I imagine the old phrase, it's better to have loved and lost than never loved at all. And I look at that, and the pain that they went through was something that I've not seen. And it's the longevity of a disease like cancer as well. You're literally watching someone's demise in front of you, someone that's so powerful, someone that's birthed the people in that room there. It's
tough, isn't it?
But
it's just it is unfortunately just a way of life now, though, isn't it? Like you say, it's just one of those things. And
getting out of them, you know, getting out of that situation, it's like listening to your story for a number of reasons, like the inspiration around that. Like, it's fucking not easy. Like, it's not an easy thing to do. As easy as it sounds, I'll just go to the gym, pick up a weight, or, you know, go in something cold, that'll make it all better. It isn't that, is it? It's like the shift of the mind and the discipline, and also talking about it and being able to say, like, this is a normal feeling. These happen everywhere in the world. Like, I'm with you. Like, I feel you. You know, everyone's got a story, haven't they? So, right, I was going to keep, we'll go positive and upbeat now. And we're going to look at some stuff. We'll have a look on the big screen. We'll do Joe Rogan style. Right, so this is called Stoltman versus Hixey, Max Log.
This must have been the first year. Or Europe's Strongest Man, I think it was.
Who's this dude? Hicks.
Graham Hicks, he's a big presser.
There's 195. So that's all, it's not all shoulder, is it? That's like chest, back, everything. That's like full body, but where's the main strength? One.
Jeez, that's a juicy bum.
Yes. How many years ago is this?
It's just a couple of years ago. This was
10 years ago. He's got no grey hair.
No grey hair. Shaved short at the sides. That's what I do.
Short back and sides. Yeah.
So it's explosive. You want to get that pop with your legs, your knees.
Yeah.
He's got a lot in him. I think this is one. Just another warm
up for Luke Stoltman. Oh, it's a warm up. He rates you.
Hope I don't fail.
195. So it's not a clean, is it? Well, it is a clean.
Clean and press.
Easy. So look, that's 195 kgs. Would you have done that at home? Like, so that's, you've done that weight a few times,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So in the last couple of years, Tom's log press has come up really well. He just won the log press championships last couple weeks ago. Still not as big a press as me yet, but no.
Was this your exercise? This was.
I've had a wee shoulder injury the last year or so, so trying to get that sorted out.
Do another one. So this is COVID, isn't it? Because there's people virtually on your own.
Yeah.
Is that better being on your own or not?
No, I prefer in a competition environment. So this is 221 kilos. There was a bit of a lag between the referee, Big Z, and he was in Lithuania.
The Wi-Fi's a bit out there.
And the Highland Wi-Fi.
Clean's easy. Scotsman hold the record.
And what a
lift there.
Easy.
Yes. Fuck. Okay, now we were pumped that one.
So you've done there for the log lift. What's that? 21?
221.
And what was the record?
Before it was 220 kilos.
So you broke the record there?
So the UK record. The world record is 230 kilos now.
Yeah.
So it's just got, that just got broken two weeks ago. 230.
Could you do that or not?
Yeah.
It's only 9 kgs.
It's only a couple of bags of sugar, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly.
It's nothing, come on.
Easy for the big boy, eh? Easy, mate.
But yeah, hopefully next year when the shoulder's back to like 100%.
You do that, right, so if you've done 221 there, or you know it's 230, like surely at home you're banging, or you're going to try at home a few times, right?
So the most thing I did at home was 228.5.
Oh, okay.
Which was above the world record by half a kilo at the time. So again, it's kind of building confidence.
That is the hard thing about world records, because realistically, you only get kind of one shot, and that one shot could be the one. So you like when you do like world record attempts, you never ever train the world record. So like, you know, when I was doing my Atlas Stone world record attempt, it was at 286. I only trained to 260 because, you know, when you're training at 100%, your body could just collapse, and you, like, you know, when I did the 286, I did it once and it was the easiest I've ever done it. So you never ever, no strongman ever goes for the world record in the gym. Like, it's just, because, like I said, you know, you're exhorting yourself at 100%. You've never done that weight before. You could do it in the gym. Your body could collapse. You could never get it ever again. Okay. And it's just, and it will just get harder and harder to build up again, build up again, really? Build up again. Yeah.
So it's almost like the stars need to align in that one moment.
Yeah, I think so. It's, I mean, everyone's different, but
most people don't do that anyway, do they? So,
yeah, I mean, ugh, it just depends. And sometimes if you're having a good day, you want to give it a little tickle.
My
yeah.
Glasgow Stoners, so Tom Stoltman Stone Run. This is my first year.
World's Strongest Man, the tune.
This is it, man.
You hot? Where's that one? I watched this one.
This is Sacramento. This was warm.
Was it?
Really, aye. About 40 degrees.
I remember this one because this is where you were chanting as well.
Aye. Big Brian Shaw, man.
Good lad.
Really nice boy. Is aye, really good guy, yeah. Aye, he's class, he's a...
Like, look at the size of Tom.
Look at the big curls in him, man.
Because for a tall man, this shouldn't work or not.
This should, this
or
is
should
actually,
it work? It's easier because you had the higher up.
Yeah, longer limbs and a bit taller. Like, look at the speed of that, man. Fucking maniac. Oh, Brian's just on his fourth.
Oh.
He looks round.
Yeah, man.
So what was that? Was that the winning?
That was, he knew he won it.
Yeah,
then.
So yeah, I had to win that. Whoever won that stone run would win World's Strongest Man. So
that was it. That was the moment.
Yeah, yeah. So that last stone was 210 kilograms. So, yeah.
Such a cool arena as well.
It's wild.
With the Rogue as well, equipment.
So you look a lot taller than Brian there, Tom. It's weird. Maybe that's that curls.
Look at the size of the back.
Jeez. Mr. Monster, man. Like that, to do that on that stage with that much pressure as well, that's oofed.
And that's oofed. That feeling you were talking about, that euphoria.
Boom.
So is it heavier the last stone?
Yeah.
Because it's shorter stall to put it on?
No, they're all the stalls are the same height.
Okay.
It goes from like 120 to 210 at World's Strongest Man. So it's like the heaviest stone run you'll do is at Worlds. So,
oh, I might have a go. You've got 120 at home, haven't you?
Yeah, easy, mate. Come
easy,
up.
Yeah.
I'll get you repping 200 kg in a week.
We've got a 286 kilo stone as well.
I'm all right straight up and down. I'll be honest, I deadlift. I do about 180 for five
sets
of five.
A lot of people say that.
Yeah, so like, yes, we got... Yeah, so I did what look you seen there were Luke's at home record. I did my 28, so I did the world record stone at home, so it was 286 kilograms. It's a big stone, and now I just use it as a seat because it's so hard to train for. Like I said, a world record's so hard to train for because we're professional athletes and we train for 5-6 events. To try and specifically train for one event, it's so hard. That's why, like, some like Iron Bibby, for example, who's broken the world log record twice in the last 2 years. Because that's all he focuses on. You have to focus on that, like, 100%. Like, when we did the stone record, because it was COVID, Luke could focus on the log, I could focus on the stone, and we got so strong with it. And but, yeah, if someone said to me, do the 286 stone in, like, 3 months, I probably wouldn't be able to do it, because you're so focused on other things. World records are nice. I always think world records are nice, but they never, ever kind of stamp your name in history, because world records will always get broken eventually. And, yeah, I just think it's... Titles are so much more valuable and prestigious than a world record.
Yeah, it's like there's so much more going on, isn't there? It's like the complete athlete now, isn't it? When you're doing all the different events.
And I think it's so, you put your body through so much more, I think, for trying one world record than you do training for a competition. And if you win a competition, you get such much more prestige and much more kind of, you know, stuff off the back of it. Whereas a world record, it's like, I did a world record, Stone. Well done, you know, it's impressive, but it's never like that big thing, is it? So.
Did you just say you did? What was your deadlift there? I've never
180 kilogram.
180
for 5.5s.
Yeah. Well, that's trap bar. I probably do about 170. It's fucking embarrassing
to
say.
Four plates aside, that's decent.
So, like now, because my body's wrecked, I do the watt bike. I can do concept 2 rower, and then I'll do heavy weights. So I'll do like 5 sets of 5 on dumbbell bench, 50 kg.
Oh, nice, you go,
I flip it, then I do single arm row, and then I'll do heavy trap bar.
Oh,
but
nice.
Everything points to water, especially being tall, right? So I'm not going to age well. Like, you don't see 75, 8-year-old, 6'9" humans walking about, do you? Everything's about, you know, looking after yourself after. Mm-hmm. And I listened to Rogan and Hulk Hogan. I don't know if you saw The Shape.
I haven't watched that yet.
Yeah, you should watch it. I mean, he's 70 odd.
Is he?
And because of what he's been through, all the injuries that he's had, I'm not fucking putting myself in the same sphere as Hulk Hogan, but he still trains now, and they talk about everything out there. Is it obviously around cold therapy, the mind, but also doing weights and doing heavy weights?
Right, okay.
It'll be different. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where you lads go when you're 60. Like, how do you decompress?
It's a sad thing. I think is like, you know, you look at one person who's, I think, like, kind of really try to keep on going, was Ronnie Coleman. Like, he was a legend, but then he just, I think, wanted just to keep pushing, even at 50, 60, 70 years old. And for, like, you know, what he's done, you know, you can look at like Jay Cutler's and the Dorian Yates. They look unbelievable still. But it's a shame to see Ronnie Coleman in that like state. Like, he can hardly walk, and he's kind of the same age as, you know, Jay Cutler's, the Dorian Yates. So yeah, you need to kind of look. That's the most important thing, isn't it? Like, look, Ronnie got like what, surgery and a disc in his back. He's like, yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
1 week later, yeah, buddy.
I know.
Yeah, so he loves the life, but
it's just adapting your training to your lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Right, lads. Before we go, what's next? Give us what's on the horizon.
So we're competing this weekend, Giants Live. Team UK versus Team USA.
Yes. UK, come on, UK.
Ooh,
Liverpool. Yeah.
Yeah, Liverpool, so that'll be good.
And so the US are coming over?
The US.
All right.
The big Yankees are coming over.
Strong, isn't he?
Brush them aside,
yeah. Yes, definitely.
Strong smelling.
So we'll know what's happening. Well, this will be out next week, so we'll see the outcome
see
of that.
See what happens, yeah.
Who's favourites for that?
Probably us.
UK, yeah.
There you go. So it's an upset if you don't win.
Yeah, probably. I hope so. I mean, world's strongest man.
Yeah, of course. And no pressure. And his brother.
So yeah, we've got that, and then just trying to busy. We've got maybe a documentary coming out soon, hopefully.
Maybe,
Netflix.
Definitely.
Definitely, yeah. So
definitely.
We've been filming for the last 4 years, I think. So before Tom and I started winning things, we were filming with some guys. They followed us around. So it's like Joe Rogan saying, imagine your life if a documentary crew had been living it. So we've
done it.
Been doing that for the last
Wicked.
4 years.
And so Netflix have commissioned
They're
that.
Speaking to Netflix at the moment, yeah. So it's just trying to get everything sorted. And yeah, just next year, retain the title,
just
get on the podium.
Just keep training, keep building a profile and just... keep living a life. Eh?
Keep going to that cold water, baby.
Yeah, I'm going to head up to the cold water really soon. I promise. Maybe before Christmas. We'll see.
Anytime, if not after.
Yeah, lads,
we'll get something short.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Genuinely, like getting you into the studio and chatting. I spoke to you for 2 more hours. So
yeah, it's wild.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Thank
Cheers.
You.
And good luck over the next few weeks.
Thank you, man.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.